What's up, you guys? Sean Ross Sapp. It's the Fightful Select Backstage Report podcast. Sorry for the delay. I greatly apologize for such a thing. Bob's Discount Furniture has been messing with my money, so I had to spend about 4 or 5 hours today dealing with that. But by God, we're here now, and that's what's important, and we have a bunch of news from John Cena's retirement to Money in the Bank to just a ton of stuff emerging from Forbidden Door, so let's get right into it. Lots of questions about John Cena's retirement. He formally announced that 2025 would be his last year in pro wrestling. Now, he said that WrestleMania, Royal Rumble, and Elimination Chamber would be his last of those, which led people to think that he was wrapping up then, but he's not. He's going to wrestle throughout the year. Now, talent that I spoke to said they didn't realize he was going to retire until they saw him in the Last Time Is Now merchandise. There were several people in the company that knew the news was coming. Obviously, they had to produce the merchandise, but they got that close to the vest. I actually asked WWE that day, like, hey, Cena, I hear he's in town. And they were like, yep, he sure is. Didn't say he would be doing anything on the show, but he wasn't hiding. They didn't necessarily keep it that much of a secret. But in addition to his WWE schedule, the company is expecting him to have a number of other obligations next year, but there were some discussions on how Cena would be utilized during the retirement tour, how many dates he would commit to, and the like. There have also been talks about how Cena will be utilized within WWE following his retirement, but it was adamant that he would be seen on screen again in some capacity following that tour. Now, with John Cena working in 2025, he'll have worked at least one wrestling match every year from 1999 to 2025, and specifically one in WWE every year since 2000. A lot of people think that he debuted in 2002, but he actually worked a couple of dark matches in 2000 and 2001. Several talent already reached out to Fightful and said that they are angling for a match with him. We've not heard of any significant injuries emerging from Money in the Bank. We did ask about Tonga Loa. We were told that Chelsea Green, Zoe Stark, Chad Gable were fine after their spots. Matt Cardona, Josh Alexander, and Jade Chung were around the show. Former referee Jimmy Corderas was around as well. Speaking of referees, those in Gorilla said the referee in the main event, Jason Ayers, was fine. He recently returned from an injury. There was a lot of lighthearted joking about Tonga Loa accidentally punching Kevin Owens in the ass and then Tama Tonga in the head on the low blow attempt. Chelsea Green received an awful lot of praise following her match, as not only did she pull off the spot, but a lot of people backstage were telling me that she pulled it off as safely as possible. And one person told me that. And then a lot of people were telling me that her promotion of the show ahead of time, both in media and her social media, really made a great impression. She was all in on doing that, all in on making sure that people cared about this show. Lots of praise for her there. I was told that when it came to the table spot, she was like, yeah, no big deal, done that before. I can do it again. Good for her, man. She's worked very, very hard. It is abundantly clear, and it's paying off for her. There were a lot of people on social media who noted that Seth Rollins was in town for Heatwave, but there were a lot of talent that were still in town because WWE Raw was in Ottawa. It's less than an hour flight, so there was no need to immediately leave or anything. Oh, man, the World Heavyweight title match. So a lot of people confused, including myself, were confused by the Falcon Arrow that led to Damian Priest not kicking out. So Triple H highlighted this after the show and indicated that it was Damian Priest that didn't kick out. That was the belief backstage. Now, there was no heat on him. I mean, he's known as very easy to deal with. He works really hard. Very rarely does anything like this happen with him. I don't know specifically what happened. I'm sure it's something that he will address eventually in an interview. One source said it's an unfortunate situation, but those don't usually happen with Damian Priest, and he was probably more bothered about it than anyone. Considering how much he gives of himself, it would be silly for anybody to hold that against him. It's just a shit happens situation. Some assume that Drew McIntyre's music hitting was supposed to interrupt the count, but a producer said that wasn't the case, and it would be really, really silly for that to stop a pinfall count. I brought up to them the fact that that happened with Sting years ago, and they're like, yeah, that was the Vince McMahon era. It's a little bit different. Speaking of the Vince McMahon era, Rod Zapata was the same referee that got fined at WrestleMania 35 when Ronda Rousey didn't keep her shoulder down and he counted the three anyway, with the line of thinking that matches should have been called as shoots. However, that couldn't happen here for a number of reasons. Well, let's just walk down the line here. Seth Rollins would have became champion. So therefore, the stipulation of Seth Rollins not being able to challenge for a title would not have applied. Damian Priest would have then been kicked out of Judgment Day, something that creatively they weren't prepared for. Also, if Drew McIntyre would have cashed in Money in the Bank, it would not have been a no DQ match. Now, could they have just had CM Punk interfere and it be a DQ anyway? Sure. But I think from a storyline perspective, what happened was legal as well. But there was no heat on Rod Zapata, and it was just a you'll go get him next time type of thing for Damian Priest from those that I talked to. Tiffany Stratton, Carmelo Hayes, and LA Knight spoke with Fightful ahead of WWE Money in the Bank. Tiffany told us that she does hope to branch into Hollywood eventually and sign with Paradigm Talent Agency. She also talked about the Australia crowd really loving her, said that she's a big fan of Justin Bieber. We talked to Carmelo Hayes, who I wouldn't say he got offended, but was a little put off by Joel Pearl asking about Ring of Honor, which I'll say this was a question that I instructed him to ask because I was very interested to see if something else was supposed to come of that years ago. But, you know, Randy Orton was a big victory for Carmelo Hayes, and he ended up getting something for free at Potbelly's in New York as a result of winning that match. But a lot of good stuff there. LA Knight would not confirm that he peed in Logan Paul's pool, but he did talk about the Triple H Fitness Series video and said that it was his only workout video he did, but it was interesting. He didn't think that anybody really knew what they were in for there. U.S. and Intercontinental titles for the women. PWN had reported this. We have not confirmed that this is going to happen. Talent we've talked to had not heard about it until the report, but are hopeful that it'll happen. But it has been discussed within WWE. We just haven't confirmed that it's on its way. There were some images that went around. Those were AI-generated images. Those weren't like actual designs, as cool as they might be. Not actual designs. Tommaso Ciampa, we spoke with him and asked him if he had a moral conflict in being in a tag team with a Cleveland Browns fan. Because, you know, those are the worst type of human beings. And he said that he's not just around one, like everybody around him kind of outnumbers him as a result of that. He said that he tried to make the best of NXT 2.0 after Black and Gold. He said that, you know, a lot of his friends were leaving the company. Things were changing. He wanted to make the best of it. Spoke very highly of Braun Breaker as well and said that Breaker made it fun for him. They got to make use of the God of War gear as well. Didn't know if he was ever going to be able to re-team with Johnny Gargano again, and is very happy that that ended up happening. Let's talk about some AEW. Ricochet is likely headed to AEW. His contract was up at midnight on July 1st. He was not contractually eligible to appear on Forbidden Door, but he's eligible now. Fightful, we had put in that Discord, rather, on Wednesday night that we weren't expecting him on the show, but he is headed to AEW. His agent was backstage at AEW last week. Missa Kate, also a free agent. We're told there is interest from TNA. I'm supposed to be talking to her this week. Also, Joe Alonzo, who left NWA. We had an interesting story that we're going to do on holidays now, because, you know, there's not a lot of news that breaks on holidays. So 4th of July, maybe Thanksgiving, Christmas, we're going to have some stories like these where I get answers on questions that you guys want to know about. And by far, the lockbox was the biggest request. And some of you go, what the hell is the lockbox? In 2016, Shane McMahon returned to WWE after, I want to say, like 7 years gone. He was set for a match with The Undertaker, and a stipulation was added where Vince McMahon said that if Shane lost, Vince would get the contents of a lockbox that Shane had possession of, which presumably held Vince McMahon's dark secrets, which could not have possibly held the dark secrets in which he held as of that point. No chance. Now, Fightful reached out to our audience about unfinished stories. This was the one. This was the one everybody asked about. And it's just that Vince McMahon's a fucking idiot, guys. That's it. That's it. I finally talked to somebody, multiple people from creative in that era, and I was like, what's up with the lockbox? Can we get can we find out what it is? Enough time has went by, and they said nothing was in the lockbox. In fact, it was just something that Vince McMahon added at the last minute, blurted out, never had any idea for, never had anything that was going to be followed up on that. And Shane was supposed to lose anyway, so there was never a reason for them to do it. But no rhyme, reason, plan. Vince McMahon just creatively bankrupt in many, many ways. Daniel Garcia in AEW. Sources familiar with his situation said that his deal was up in the fall, specifically October. Unless he's re-signed since like a few months ago, which there are some people in AEW that believe that he has, and that has not been confirmed by me. They don't believe that he's going anywhere. They want him to stay there. When we asked those directly close to Garcia about the status, they said that a lot of his future would likely come into focus soon. We did reach out to Garcia. We didn't get a comment or record on background for the story, playing that a little close to the vest. But he had a tryout in January 2021 for WWE, which we're told went exceptionally well to the point that it landed an NXT match. And they didn't sign him, but told him that if anyone else was interested in him, they'd sign him sooner. Those that we spoke to said that the tryout, among some others in 2021, led to WWE running some specific tryouts for wrestlers with in-ring experience. Man, if there was any doubt before last week, it has to be erased, man. Daniel Garcia is everything that he says he is. He had an incredible match. He sells his ass off, can wrestle his ass off, can cut a promo, has some charisma that I think is very... It is such a reflection of the way that wrestling is going. So I think he's going to probably get a really good deal by the time things are done. Cole Carter sidelined with an injury. He's expected to be out through the end of the year, which is very, very unfortunate. Riho also sustained an injury during her AEW Collision match on Saturday. She was poised for a feud with Serena Deeb, but no word on how long she's going to be sidelined for. Riho hadn't appeared for 4 months ahead of the start of the feud. Yuka Sakazaki was also planned to feud with Serena Deeb. She has been sidelined with an injury as well, which is very unfortunate. Get well soon to all three of them. Blue Meanie was backstage at last weekend's TNA tapings, just visiting. Wonder Boy Brian Morris worked as an extra for WWE Raw last week. A lot of people asking about the extra that took the Crossroads a few weeks ago that went viral. That is David Goldie. He is a standout at Monster Factory and really that entire area. I encourage you guys, check out the Monster Factory show on Apple TV Plus. You can really, I mean, my gosh, he's featured heavily, but he's really good, man. He's really good. Also, Facade was involved in that as well. There was not discussion of using Dijak or Ricochet on Forbidden Door. Dijak was invited to visit, but Ricochet's deal was not up as of yet. Natalya was not at last week's WWE Raw. She was not scheduled for media in Canada either. This doesn't mean one thing or another. It just means that she wasn't there, and her deal was scheduled to be up in the past couple of weeks. I am not ready to say she has or hasn't signed because I do not have that information as of now. It's being played very close to the vest. She's not saying anything. WWE's not saying anything. NWA has a number of deals that have been coming up leading to some of the roster leaving the company and a number of talent re-signing. We're going to be speaking to some of those. We're told that OVW's streak of episodic TV could be in danger. The OVW TV was at the Davis Arena was postponed because they had operated with a broken AC the last couple of weeks, and OVW themselves had deemed it unsafe for the talent. OVW was set to film their 1300th episode of TV on July 11th. They have a weekly streak that extends, I think, just a little bit past SmackDown right now. For those asking about MVP, he is still under contract to WWE, so he's still there for the meantime. Swerve and Ospreay put on an incredible main event for Forbidden Door. This story, it was so funny that we ran last, I want to say Tuesday. And it ran because a bunch of people were saying, why did this match happen so soon? Why not at Wembley? Why not next year, Double or Nothing? And sort of the question of why it was asked is sort of beyond why it was answered. It's why it happened. So I asked and I was told the story of why the hell this match was happening. It's because Will Ospreay went to AEW management and was like, you know what? I see a lot of people saying that I'm a place or Swerve's a placeholder for me, and I feel like it's a big match right now. Why don't we just do it? Like, there's no plans to do that anytime soon, so why not do it now? And I'll put him over. And that also sends a message to anybody else. Hey, look, you can lose to this guy. Doesn't matter what title you have. Doesn't matter who you are. You can afford to lose to the world champion. Not that I think that anybody had a problem with that, but Ospreay definitely did go and pitch the match and wanted to lead by example there. Ospreay and Swerve already had big creative plans in store throughout the year, which is abundantly clear based on the direction. For Swerve, it is either Danielson or Hangman. And for Ospreay, it is MJF. And an example was set. And there was never a plan for those two to wrestle it all in. AEW sources say that Ospreay has been great to deal with in the company. I had some people say, why would they put that out there? Why would he put that out there? They didn't put it out there. I asked a question. Ospreay didn't put it out there. Wasn't his story that he was telling people. It's just word that had gotten around. Either way, man, it shows you that people will be cynical even over the most like positive stories. Go figure. Guys, thank you all so much. Until next time, we're out. Effie sucks.